Welcome back, everybody. Always like to have you check us out on the web. And where are they going to go and finding us, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And on Facebook, like us, please. We are there. And I'm hoping to do an intro, go outside and freeze myself out doing an intro for this week's show.
Sweet.
For Facebook, yeah.
Dig it.
You know, when you look at hunters and the label that hunters get in society.
What you talking about, Willis?
Huh?
What you talking about, Willis?
Talking about Willis. Well, if you look at the branding, people get branded. If you're a hunter, there's mental images that come to mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different, I guess, descriptions.
Stereotypes, are you saying?
Yeah, well, you'll understand when I start to get into this. But so a hunter is described as a person who hunts game, a dog used or trained for hunting, a horse used or adopted for use in hunting with hounds, one that searches for something, that would be a hunter as well, a pocket watch with a single hinged protective cover, that's called a hunter. But none of the definitions associate hunting or hunters with wildlife conservation. That's the crazy part about it, because one of the prime things that comes out of it when you look at your hunting license, right, is it goes to conservation. It
mm-hmm.
goes to...
That's the nice thing about it.
It goes to habitat. It goes to a lot of different... Management.
Management,
of, yeah. All those key things. And this article that I had read, it said... explanations for the implied disconnect. The simplest and the best unflattering way the hunters are presented is in the media. For example, Elmer Fudd.
Mm-hmm. He's a good one.
The two goofball hunters in Men in Black 1. Walter Palmer, that was the Cecil the Lion Killer. Remember that way back when?
No.
It was a guy that paid money to go.
Cecil.
Hunt lion, and the lion was an old lion. It was
okay.
Apparently, everybody just came out as an outrage and an uproar, I should say. The professional hunter slash villain in the Robin Williams film Jumanji, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
With the big caliber rifle, always trying to shoot him. Poaching incidents that cluttered the news feeds, and law enforcement needs public help in identifying, or Iowa farmer nabs antler thieves. So a lot of the connotations that come out are not surprising why the general public, the approval of hunting is higher than the approval of hunters. Make sense?
Say it again.
The approval of hunting, the act of hunting, is always a higher approval rating amongst the public than the approval for hunters.
Okay, I could see that.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's a semantic, but 90% of Colorado, for example, the registered voters say hunting should be legal. Simultaneously, 45% of the same voters voted in favor of a proposal to ban lion, lynx, and bobcat trophy hunting this last November.
Okay.
And it really comes down to a branding problem. And this is when I started to get into this. I thought, wow, this is kind of crazy. Because always the connotation can be the optic, right? If it's an optic, it's what do people see? What's their vision of what is involved in hunting? Now, between the three of us, we practice ethics in hunting. You want a clean kill. You're not going to take a shot that's abnormal. You're not going to shoot before hours or after hours. All of those things are followed pretty much to the letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different elements that come into play. And so the context in two different states, they establish wildlife councils, a council in Michigan and a council in Colorado. Both of them are separate from the state's wildlife agency, and they're supported by a small surcharge, $1.50 on hunting licenses. Now, this is the cool part. When Michigan initiated the Wildlife Council in 2012, 39% didn't think hunters were responsible people. 42% didn't think or know whether hunters followed regulations. 61% didn't think or know whether management was important for healthy wildlife populations. And 44% didn't know or believe whether illegal regulated hunting led to species extinctions. Okay, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, as of now, 84% of Michiganers support hunting and 89% believe that hunting is important to the state's culture. That is what you get when you have a guided or directed messaging. And I think that's something that's extremely important, because getting funding and all those key pieces are very important in habitat development. And of course, it says, suppose the Wildlife Council marketing efforts went beyond hunting, communicating similarities between hunters' values and those of non-hunting public. The survey shows 82% of Americans, hunters and non-hunters alike, support animal welfare but oppose animal welfare but oppose animal rights. This may be why animal rights organizations misleadingly label their agencies as animal welfare while promoting and funding animal rights and anti-hunting agendas. So this holds true in Colorado, for example. You know, the mountain lions that are trying to ban mountain lion and bobcat hunting. Robert Redford, we know how well actors work in convincing people of things,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about not so much? Robert Redford states, mountain lions and bobcats are vital to the ecosystem and they should not be reduced to trophies or pelts. Banning trophy hunting and fur trapping is not just protecting these magnificent creatures. It's about safeguarding the integrity of our natural world for future generations. Now, that's Robert Redford saying that, according to Samantha Miller. She's also a campaign manager for Cats Aren't Trophies, or CAT. Proposition 127, that's in Colorado. They're trying to get come across and ban that hunting of those cats. They say it's not an anti-hunting issue. It's a very Coloradan issue. If you know animal cruelty when you see it, it's an opportunity to fix it. Well, what ended up happening was that was voted down, that Proposition 127. And the implications that hunters, from those statements that are being made, is that hunters don't care about healthy, sustainable populations, mountain lions, despite the fact that regulated hunting grew the, listen to this one, regulated hunting grew the mountain lion population in Colorado from 125 in 1965 to 38 to 4,400 today. That's just in Colorado. And again, that's regulated hunting. Second point that they're not taking into consideration, or they don't think hunters do, is they don't care about conserving wildlife for future generations, particularly untrue and contrary to the North American model of wildlife conservation, which all of us support. And hunters engage in animal cruelty. This is despite the fact that all regulated hunting is premised on the fair chase concept of a painless quick kill, like I just had mentioned earlier. You always go for the kill that's going to be the opportune. You're not shooting just wildly into the woods just to shoot. So that's a key piece to it. So really, when it comes down to it, and you look at the branding and what hunting has done, Michigan and Colorado, I'll be honest with you, I think they have taken it to a whole different level. So I think it's something we need to look at for other states and maybe take them as a model for what could be, I don't know, maybe an established program that can be implemented across all states and change some of that branding issues. You've seen it before. It's like, oh, he's wearing plaid and he's wearing an orange hunter's hat.
Mm-hmm.
Must be a hick or a... And it turns out the guy's a multi-million-dollar...
Just a rich...
He's a company
guy.
Owner or...
Yeah.
He's, you know... I mean, same
taking
thing...
Taking all these
it's
trips
like
and...
Writing a Harley, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell a book by its cover, number one. But number two, I think hunters have taken a bad rap in a lot of the things that go on and not really understanding what they contribute to the actual wildlife and the world about wildlife. So... I wanted to get to this story that I had we talk about.
Are we talking about the ways to die?
Yeah, you know, awesome. We talk about
because we
ice
need
safety.
To know.
I wanted to go at it a
six
different way.
Different ways to die.
I wanted to go a different way this
on
year
on the ice.
You know what I mean? And it's important to go at a different way. And the different way, guess what? Let's take it in a big time different way. Six ways to die while ice fishing.
Isn't there like a TV show about like all these different ways to die? 100
yeah,
ways
there
to
is,
die?
But this is a different one.
All right.
So there's just six different things that you need to do if you want to die while you're ice fishing. Use a vehicle. Number one.
Talked about that already.
32 of the 65 deaths in 2019 were connected to riding snowmobiles, 6 to ATVs and UTVs, and 3 to cars and trucks. Vehicles exert more pressure in frozen water than walking on foot. They're great for accessing distant locations when you put a lot of people in danger to get there. If you break through in a vehicle, it's likely you're going to do so at speed. You ever gone across ice and then hit water with a snowmobile?
Yeah. No.
It's crazy. Because at that point, you don't back
honestly,
off. Just keep going.
I haven't ridden a snowmobile since I was like 7.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Not good. So, again, take a vehicle. That's the first way. Second way, don't check the ice reports. Ice fishermen might be a group of anglers most willing and enthusiastic to share information online. Most major hard water fisheries have at least one reliable source of up-to-date reports on ice thickness. And realistically, you're going to be safer if you do. Keep your eye on those sites. Look for them and go back to those sites if you're thinking about going. Knowing those things ahead of time before you make a trip up north is not going to force you into a situation you and I have talked about at length with Don. You know, people say, oh, we're going up ice fishing. You get up there. The conditions are not bad. Well, we already got here. We might as well go anyway. No. And that's what got a lot of people stranded last year out on Red Lake and a lot of other lakes. Knowing ahead of time will allow you to plan accordingly. Don't haul a truck towed ice hut if there's only 9 inches of ice. Don't check. Don't push it. Not good. If there's not a report posted online, simply call up the relevant tackle shop and they will readily answer questions. And they're the ones that don't want people to get stranded as well. They want business, but they will return business.
Right.
Not one-way business. Ignoring shorelines is another one. If you ever had a beer can and a bottle of water explode in your freezer, you'll understand how liquids expand as they freeze.
Funny.
Yeah. Lakes are no different. Ice caps widen as they grow, and they push up on lake shores, cracking and shoving and subsiding and creating all sorts of unpredictable conditions. Sometimes ice in a bay will break free and float out into open water, leaving anglers stranded. That never happens. Start every hard water adventure with a healthy dose of caution as you step onto the lake. Another way to die is you assume consistent thickness of ice. Say you've taken measurements at a regular intervals as you're walking your way out to your fishing spot. Unless you intimately know the body of water, it would be fair to assume that the thickness will continue across the whole surface. And that's true, especially if you get schooling fish under the ice. I've had it happen on Forest Lake, and know specifically a friend of mine was driving on Forest Lake, and well, soon he was in Forest Lake.
No.
Yep. And it wasn't good. Turns out they did find that the ice had eroded, and it was due to some shallower water. It wasn't in deep water, it was in like 4 feet of water, but there's fish that had schooled up and caused a bit of a problem under the ice. Big lakes freeze up, highly inconsistent progression. You often see bays in the head of the lakes freeze first, spreading outward from there. Some large lakes, the areas around outflow never freezes, so watch for in and outflow areas. And in a river, please, if you're going out, you need to understand the treacherous spots, because it's a consistent part of what happens in any river area. People will go in consistently in the same spot, i.e. in Mississippi River, down below Point No Point, Methodist Point. There's a wing dam right there. The water flows, and people go in all the time. And not good. Oh, yeah. The other thing, if you want to die, six ways to die, don't bring safety gear.
Yeah.
Good it's one. Important if you want to die to not bring any safety gear with you. Don't bring ice picks. Don't bring any safety spikes at all with you. Don't you
just
don't need
bring
to do
anything.
That. No, don't need to do that. You can do it with 6-inch nails. Tie a string, put it through your jacket so they are there at all times. It's not a problem. Go to the hardware store if you forgot. Maybe wherever you're near, you don't have to have anything fancy. Tie the string on it. Get it done. Put it on there. Be safe. But not a good thing. The other thing is to also have a safety throw bag. You can throw to somebody that's got rope in it because you can throw the bag a long way.
Right.
And then just get somebody that rope and have that handy and just in case somebody else does follow the 6 ways to die, you will help prevent that from happening. And last but not least, get drunk.
Yes.
One of the last 6 ways
Thank
to die
you.
Is
I'm so happy that made
get
the list.
Drunk. Many anglers and ice fishing fishermen and men wouldn't be ice fishing without a shot of schnapps or a light beer handy. Moderate sipping is one thing, but of course, all out inebriation can cost you. It can get you also can get you turned around on the ice, which is scary. Lake Erie is one of those places. You can get in a whiteout condition, think you're driving back, you're following the GPS, and guess what?
Dude, it doesn't matter how big the lake is.
No, you're in the drink.
If it's whiteout, I mean...
Whiteout, you don't know where you're at. If you're following your GPS, the other thing is, too, if you're following your GPS, and next thing you know, it's like, oh, guess what? They did push away from shore, and I just drove into the lake. So you've got to have your head on a swivel. You've got to have your wits about you.
Yeah, bring a compass.
Get
That's
off the
ice.
That's
always a good idea,
if
too.
If you're staying nearby, have a cocktail when you're done. Success or not success, it's all good one way or t'other. So,
yeah, don't follow those 6 ways to die.
Well,
do
no.
the opposite.
Yeah, no, exactly.
6 ways to live.
Exactly.
Do the opposite. Yeah.
If you don't follow them, you'll eliminate those 6 ways. We like to, you know, it's a process of elimination, right?
Right.
And you can't fix stupid.
Nope, you can't.
Nope.
There
well,
it is.
Well, speaking of not being stupid, you guys were not stupid for listening to our show. We certainly appreciate that every week, each and every week. We're here for Don, who's not here, Ava, and myself, Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. Thanks much for joining us. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.